This is a production of Cornell University.
So I think we should go ahead and get started. So if I could get a motion to call the meeting to order.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Seconded, all right. So calling our CJC committee meeting to order. Logan, you'll see I'm not quite as adept as at the Roberts rules as you are. So I figure it out as I go along, and Wendy is a great resource for that. Just want to go over our agenda here today. I want to just first welcome Matt Gornig, who is here with us today. Matt is going to be our amazing guide through the world of webinars with Zoom. Matt, is your timeline such that it'd be okay if we had you on for 5:30 to talk through things? Is that okay to wait a little bit longer to start talking about the formatting?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, okay, I'm good. I might I'll be looking at my second screen a little bit. So.
Okay, no problem. I'll say your name before I ask you a question, because okay. I hate it when people do that to me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. What would you say? You know. So just to talk through a little bit about the forum format before we get into the Zoom piece, I want to just kind of talk about the questions that we have. So I'm going to move ahead a little bit in the agenda into the questions from items 3 and 4 on the agenda. So first, I want to pose the question in advance that we have received from Council's office that is intended to be asked of the CJC and University Assembly, and I've given this to Logan as well, so that she is aware of that question being asked. And being that Logan is one of the folks that will be doing the introduction, we'll ask if that would be best to have Logan answer the question. And the question is, how does the CJC and University Assembly plan to answer the question in regard to the standard of evidence? How will the campus community be involved? And I'll put that in the chat so everyone can see it as well. So the question is being asked of us. As I mentioned the other day, Council's office did provide us with an opportunity to allow for that question to be unanswered in the current revision that would be provided to the trustee councilors, in that in essence, we could provide the revisions that the council, after feedback, adapts and sends back to the University Assembly, and leave that question open as one that could be voted on providing a vote out to the public, be it student, faculty, staff, everyone to be able to provide their input. So just want to stop there and ask any questions or thoughts in regards to that question being posed over the CJC and University Assembly.
I guess I don't understand what they want from the CJC in addition to what they've already put forward, where they have two standards in one document, which I voted against, but I understand as a representative of the organization, that's what we put forward. So what more do they want other than what we already put forward? Do they want a different outcome than that?
Yeah, I'll answer that a little bit, and then Logan, I'll have you go. I think the question that's being asked is of us, how are we providing the answer to that question? In essence, that it is on the CJC and University Assembly to answer the question as to which of the standards of evidence we would advise for University Council, and that they don't have a preference one way or the other, and that it would be provided as a suggestion from the University Assembly and CJC as to how we feel that best represents our constituency. This is the overwhelming opinion that it is this or that. And I'll turn it over to Logan.
Thanks, Brandon. So what I was thinking is based on the CJC last year, as well as the CJC this year working with the UA, that this is still a question for the public. So I think that ensuring that we get enough public feedback is really important. I'm going to really stress people not leaving anonymous comments and like having like names alongside their comments, and not like, I don't know if it's out of fear, but there's a lot of anonymous comments. So if I am asked that question, I'm going to say that I am hoping that the CJC and the UA is looking at the comments from last May, as well as the comments coming in now, for the reasons in which people said one way or another, tallying those numbers and not making the decisions on our own, but making the decision based on the community. And I think that as we get closer to the date where we would have to propose something, that if we don't have a substantial amount of people who have said anything one way or another, that's when we consider asking for an extension. But until then, I think that we just keep doing what we did last year, if the CJC agrees with that, and just keeps monitoring the comments to see how people are essentially it's a tally game, and not game, but it's keeping tally from, and you can decide whether or not you want to keep tally from last year also, but some of the comments about just clear and convincing or preponderance have nothing to do with the rest of the code. So I think that would be important to keep in mind, because the UA never considered those comments. Sorry, I'm rambling, but long story short, I think that we should consider the comments from last cycle and the comments from this cycle, make like a big document, look at the big reasons why people are asking for clear and convincing, the reasons why people are asking for preponderance, the numbers on each side, and then present all of that information.
Thank you, Logan. Jen?
I wonder though, like, if I like something, I'm not quick to comment. If I don't like something, I'm the first one in there to write something that says, I don't agree with this. So I'm nervous about that method, because I wonder if folks that are like, okay, looks good, aren't going to like log in and be like, okay, looks good. The ones that hate it are going to log right in and be like, this is wrong because da, 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 da. So that makes me that, like, I get it. Like, we should tally, like, that sounds like it makes sense, but I worry about the voice of the folks that are like, okay, I think it looks good, because those folks typically don't comment. I feel like sometimes public comment calls for dissenting opinions from what was presented. So that, I get a little nervous about that.
Yes. Go ahead, Nick. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks, Brandon. I agree with Jen, definitely. I think people that like it are more inclined to not comment, but equally so, I have to point out that due to the vast number of anonymous comments, I think people that don't like it are afraid to say that they don't like it, because they just don't know how it's going to affect them. Like, you know, I don't want to say that University Council did something wrong, because University Council is writing the procedures for how I'm going to get tried if I mess up in the future. So I think there is an element of fear on the other side, where people are afraid to express their dissenting opinions. So I think it kind of balances out.
Thank you, Nick. Jen?
So yeah, I get that. And I think like the biggest thing is we have to move away from that like legalistic language. Like, there's no trial, right? The students aren't on trial. They're going to a judicial conference or a meeting. And I get, like, I talk to students every single day. I'm on the COVID compliance team. I have had a million cases since this semester started where students come in and they're like, they think it's like a judicial process and I'm trying them to get to the answer. No, I'm just having an educational conversation with them about the policy violation. So that makes me nervous. I agree with the anonymous comments. I've gone in and I've like, oh, it's weird that everyone clicks the anonymous button, even though it says like whoever reads it on the back end can see who the comment's tied to. I don't know if you guys saw that even, oh, is it you, Wendy? So I think that that's interesting that people leave anonymous comments, but I guess it's their right to do so if they don't want to publicly put their name on it. I don't know why they would choose that, but we aren't to judge why they make those decisions, I guess.
Thank you, Jen. I'll recognize Kat and then Logan.
Great. Jen, thank you so much for that comment. I really love like that you're noticing like the nuances of language that we're using here. But Nick, I like completely agree. I think that there is like some element of like maybe just basic intimidation from, you know, the anonymous comments. I think that has to do not specifically with the University Council, but just the idea of putting something with your name out there on the internet that anyone can find. I know that's something students get worried about with like jobs or whatever. So I think that might be part of it. But I also do want to recognize that I think there is most definitely response bias, where the people who are displeased are, you know, the ones commenting. Because from what I know from like the undergraduate student experience is that students, if they like, if something's fine, they will not care, you know, like they're really stressed and they have a lot of things to do. But if like they are unhappy, then they're more likely to respond. Even so, there might be some kind of sway there. I just want us to recognize that. And I'm so sorry, I have to head out for a staff meeting right now, actually. But thank you so much. Bye. Have a great evening.
Okay. Let's see. Does that ruin quorum, Wendy? So what does that mean? What happens now?
There doesn't need to be minutes or votes, but yeah. You can have a meeting.
Okay. All right.
But yeah. You can't move on anything anymore.
Okay. Thanks, Logan. And why don't you, I'll recognize you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'm sorry for just speaking out.
No.
But I figured that answered the question real quickly because I ran into that as CJC chair as well. So I know it very well by now. So what I was going to say was I plan on Thursday on like really encouraging the constituent groups across campus just to start commenting, including things that they like and things that they just want us to look in more detail about. And as for like, and the anonymous comments, like, I think it makes sense. Like my comment is anonymous. I'm one of the anonymous people. And I hope that Wendy or Gina probably, I don't know if they probably would have known it was me anyway. I think Wendy would have known it was me regardless though. The only anonymous comment that I have outstanding there, but I didn't want my name out there because I'm university assembly chair. And I think that that sets like a very weird, it's just weird for people to see my opinion. So I was asked my opinion for the first time yesterday and I said no at first, and Brandon and Barb were there and I got asked a second time, and it's the first time I've given my opinion as a chair. Jen, you remember me not giving my opinion. So with that, I'm just gonna try to really encourage people to comment. And I think that it's a good system that Wendy's able to see that not the same people are commenting, because that way we don't have a skewed system. And yeah, Wendy.
Well, I just wanted to let you know too, whomever posts anything anonymous doesn't go anywhere. Like, we're not saying, we do an analysis and say there were 20 comments submitted and 10 of them were anonymous, but we're not saying like, we know that 5 of those 10 anonymous were undergraduates or graduates. We don't break it down that much, but we do say, like, for example, there were 20 comments submitted and here's like, we kind of give percentages, like this was faculty, this was staff, but we don't go into like the mid, you know, into the weeds on that.
So just a quick question. If the same person said 20 times that they want clear and convincing to try to keep clear and convincing, is there a way that we can find that out, that person has, I don't want to say spam.
When I provide the analysis, okay. It'll be the same analysis that I provided to Joe in the spring for the forum that, you know, and we had the commenting open, and then I'm using that same format. And I can say like, there were 20 comments submitted, but there were 5, you know, unique people or individual people that made those 20 comments. So yeah, we're not saying 20 comments, 20 people. But.
Yeah, go ahead, Barb.
So I think of myself as a resource, but I do just had a thought on this particular piece. To me, as I look at the comments, what's interesting is the anonymous piece stands out, but maybe more importantly to that, I would respectfully suggest is that anonymous committee members are submitting comments, and I don't think that's wrong. I think I think there are times when somebody might, as you're saying, Logan, they might want to distinguish between a comment that they feel is appropriate to make, but they don't want to confuse that with their official role. But to me, if this is a public comment, I've been in CJC meetings and UA meetings, and we've heard lots of comments. We've all talked amongst ourselves a lot. what I think the purpose of this forum, I would respectfully suggest, and this public comment, is to hear from other people. And so to me, as if I were kind of on the receiving end of this feedback, there is value in it, certainly for council's office, because council's office hasn't sat in these meetings. But we've all, you all, the voting members, have heard each other, and it's already influenced where you stand on issues. So to me, I'm not saying I don't, I definitely do give credence to those, and they're important. But, you know, on the question of standard of evidence, that's an actual question that's been put out there. We know where the UA and CJC came out on it last spring. The council's office was asked to take those two competing views and make a proposal. And on this one, they didn't propose anything. They put it as a question. So now, to me, Jen, to your suggestion earlier, we kind of know where CJC felt last year. They were divided on it. So to me, that's I think what council's office means to ask is how do we plan to get a sufficient body of feedback so that when CJC makes a recommendation to council's office or to the UA and then to the council's office, that it's based on substantial additional input. Thanks.
Thank you, Barb. I think this is great conversation, especially, you know, for Logan to get perspective from the CJC and where we're at. So as the question is posed, she's able to provide the feedback, as we've talked about, and the importance of the public comment, because that's really what our goal here is the public comment. So I do want to keep us moving so we can get to Matt at 5:30 here. The one that I think is really important for us to understand is, are there questions that we plan to ask of, and I put council's office, but I should have been more clarifying and saying of any of the groups, are there clarifying or important questions that we as the CJC would like to ask, or the University Assembly ask of those panelists? And I do want to state, I'll state my opinion here, and in a committee, I feel a little more comfortable, Logan, than the UA might, in that it's really important to provide people an opportunity to understand the question in advance, in that this is a complex subject, and I understand that that's really important that we provide them with that. They've been flexible in adapting to what we've asked, and that, you know, the questions were a point of concern. So I think it would behoove us to be respectful of that and provide questions in advance. And I will give the caveat that it doesn't mean no one can come up with a question as the conversation goes that does ask in addition, but I think that we should plan to have at least one or two questions in advance to provide. And to your note, Jen, yes, Ryan did confirm he will be in attendance. He does, however, does not intend to answer questions because he has been removed from the process and really doesn't want to seem as somebody coming in late in the game and giving answers and things of that nature. Now, if someone is very adamant and strong, he may adapt to that, but that's kind of his standpoint where it's at right now. So I'll recognize Nick.
Thanks, Brandon. I actually, as a new member of the committee and a new student at Cornell, have one question that I'd like to ask all of the stakeholders there. It's pretty evident that there are two opposing views on the standard of evidence. So I think it's important to ask one of the groups that's supporting the change to clear and convincing why they think clear and convincing should be the adopted standard. And the group that's choosing preponderance of evidence, we should also ask them why they believe that preponderance of evidence is better. And I think that might actually help this committee make a more informed decision later.
Thank you, Nick. I really appreciate that insight. And I think that's a valuable perspective to think about, because that's what these panelists are here to do, to provide insight and where they stand on the subject and provide the public some clarification. Yes, Logan.
Yeah, first I'm going to start by saying that I no longer am going to say my anonymous comment thing after finding out that Wendy can keep track. I don't want to make people feel like they have to keep their name out there if they want to be anonymous, so disregard that. A question I think that would be important to ask all of the panelists, and I plan on being the way that you described Ryan as, really neutral and only answering more questions that I would be able to speak on behalf of the UA,
because I can't speak in any other capacity there, but I think it would be really important to just ask what areas of the code each person thinks that students, faculty, staff, the community should pay particular attention to and or look deeper into and potentially form an opinion of and comment on, like areas, I guess, that the CJC might be unclear about what direction they're going about, like, et cetera, or that other groups are unclear about or dislike. That way, each like group can say, this section, and this section, we feel like are really important for you to look into, and not tell people, obviously, how to comment, but to like where individual groups are looking at, if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you, Logan. I think that I believe that, if I understand correctly, that that may be addressed in what I'm going to send out a follow-up as well to all the panelists, and just stating in your opening comments that the important aspect is to provide your perspective on the current code and the key areas of input that you're asking the public to provide here. So I think that would be addressed in that perspective. So I think the question there that Nick had posed about the standard of evidence, how do folks feel about that question as a question posed from the CJC to provide some additional perspective of the for folks from and I also would welcome Barb and Marissa to maybe not answer the question here, but to chime in on how you feel that might be a good approach. I will say that I think council's office wouldn't answer the question because they don't have an opinion. They're really wanting to hear from us. So if Barbara and Marissa had any thoughts on that particular question, if they feel that's a valuable question from their perspective.
I definitely think that's a valuable perspective and a good way to proceed. I think the question of standard of evidence is probably the most, I mean, I think that's the one that we heard most about last spring, and it's the most undecided. And has there been a decision made about the panelists and whether there will be some introductory comments? And if so, how much time? That, for example, would have been something that I would plan to address if we have time to address people in advance. That would be something, standard of evidence would be the thing that I would mention first.
Great point. To answer that, yes, you will each have 5 to 7 minutes for an introduction to provide your perspectives and input that you're seeking. And again, I'll send out this evening a follow-up to all the panelists outlining what the expectation is, how much time is allotted in the beginning, and what we as the CJC have kind of spoken to is that's what we ask, is all of you to, it's sort of, to make that plea, hey, everybody, here's what we want to hear from you on. So please provide us with that comment. Go ahead, Nick.
Could I ask Barb specifically a question just for the, what is your office's opinion on the question of bringing your office together with the JCCs? I'm not sure, are you guys opposed to that or are you in favor of going under the same umbrella?
Yeah, so I can understand why that was a question. My comments from our office are posted publicly. And what I've said is I continue to think that that they should all be under the same umbrella, and that setting them up as setting up the codes counselors as their own independent silos is problematic for a whole lot of reasons, which I can talk about more if you'd like. I don't want to take up too much time here, but I've also said in my comments that I think we raised that issue. It got council's office. I think council's office reached a compromise on that was, as I understood it, basically what the JCCs were asking for last spring. The only role that a director has is a consulting role in hiring and potentially removing JCCs either of the codes counselors. In both cases, it's the lead counselor who manages the office. Among other reasons, I just think it's problematic in an organization to have people who are employed and have a function and not have them report anywhere. I think it's completely unrealistic and inappropriate to think that the Board of Trustees is going to be involved in hiring and potentially removing people from positions that they just don't have knowledge about. But I also have said, I tried to say in my comments, I think we raised that, got decided. I included that because I think it continues to be important. If there was some groundswell of support for it, which I don't expect to happen, I would hope it would be reconsidered. But from our office's perspective, there are other things I think that are more important to worry about in the bigger context here.
I appreciate that clarification. Thank you.
All right. Hi, Risa. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm really sorry the Faculty Senate meeting went way over and I was the speaker, so there was no way of leaving. I apologize, and I don't know if you would be willing to take 30 seconds and give me a thumbnail sketch of what you've done and where we're going. If not, I'll just try to catch up.
Yeah, I think we can do that. I just want to ask a clarifying question for Wendy. Now that we have quorum, do we need to call the meeting back to order, or are we in order from previous?
I believe you were still in order from previous. You just couldn't do any votes on anything, and we don't record, and we don't do any minutes.
Okay.
I did just shoot Gina a text to say, hey, they didn't have quorum. Now they have quorum. What do I do with that 15 minutes that we didn't have quorum? So I should hear something back from her, but yes, you're back to quorum again, so you should be fine.
So just to give you a quick outline of the pieces we've talked about, primarily we focus a little on the questions from councils, and then questions in advance from the CJC to council or any of the other panelists. The prevailing topic was the discussion of the standard of evidence, and that is a question that is coming from council's office of the University Assembly and CJC, and how do we plan answer the question regarding the standard of evidence, and how will the campus community be involved? And so I believe that Logan has the input from the CJC here, and from her experience, to be able to answer that from the University Assembly perspective, and that we are again asking the community to provide us that information if we feel that we've received enough public comments that warrant that we feel represents effectively the community, then we can use those comments to make that decision. However, if we don't feel that we have, we would ask the opportunity to readdress that question and garner additional comment to ensure we're representing the community. And then the question that we would ask, Nick proposed a question that he thought would be beneficial to ask, is those who are in support of the differing standards of evidence provide their perspective on them and why they are in support for one or the other. And we were just right there. And I think that the question I have a follow-up in regards to that question would be, if I understand correctly, and I don't understand all of this correctly, but if I understand correctly, this would probably be a question posed primarily to the JA and the JCC. Is that a correct assumption?
Why would it just be primarily to the, so I'm
going to speaking to the panelist piece from the panelist perspective there, it's council, JA, JCC, Ryan Lombardi, and University Assembly. And of those, council has no opinion. Ryan Lombardi, I don't believe, will provide an opinion in that regard. And University Assembly is asking of people. So that's why I'm stating that would leave just the two of you to provide your perspective on that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Nick.
I also think it might be productive to, when we have the second part, the Q&A, or the comment part, it would be good to kind of mention, to invite people to express their opinion on the standard of evidence at the forum itself.
That's a great point. So perhaps it is something that we could, instead of asking of the panelists, ask of the public, or ask both?
What would you... I would say both.
Both, okay. Uh, Any additional comments about at this time? That's the only question that we have posed to present. Are there any other potential questions? And I think that we should, now that we have forum, we could vote on quorum. We could vote on the forum on the question that we would ask if that question seems to be the most pressing for the CJC.
I'm sorry, maybe I missed something. I'm a little unclear about what we're doing. I understand what the question is, but is there, are we just, is this to say the CJC should ask one question?
To provide any questions that we have in advance so that those who would respond would be able to. That's not to say we can only ask one question. Okay. At this time, it was the only question that was proposed.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely. And I think, and I did spoke earlier, Risa, about the importance of providing the questions in advance to the panelists that we would intend to ask, not to say that we can't, as the conversation goes, be able to ask additional questions, but yeah. And then to Barb, to your question about the complainant advisors, I've reached out to them again and have not heard back. Marissa, have you heard officially that they would not be able to, or you just?
They told me that they could not attend because they unfortunately just didn't find out early enough to do that.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. All right, again, seeing we're getting close to our time that we would need to move into figuring out how in the world the Zoom thing works, which Matt will help us do. The only question posed at this time is the one that Nick has posed. Are there any additional questions that might be posed to provide in advance to the panelists? All right, with there being none, is there a motion
I put up a little blue hand.
Oh, sorry, I'm getting, yes, go ahead, Risa.
I mean, I don't know if this needs to be to the panelists, but I hope that there will be discussion about the nature of the hearings and whether the parties representatives, their advisors, should be able to ask questions directly of the witnesses, including direct and cross-examination, or whether that should go through the hearing chair, because that seemed to me to be a very important issue based on people's comments. So that seems important.
That's a good question there. I'm actually, reminds me, I wanted to bring up the topic of the list that you have put together, Risa. And that was the other one I wanted to speak to. So again, I think it's important that we frame this conversation as best we can to ask of the community what we want to hear comments on. And so I'll put into the chat here those things that you had put together, Risa. So I think those would be, in my opinion, if we asked of the public these items that have been addressed, which that the one you just stated is part of, their opinion on these items, and then ask the question of the on the standard of evidence piece, that might be enough to kind of get things going, and then really being able to focus on the public. Go ahead, Logan.
Yeah, I just had a question, I guess, about the structure of the panel. So I noticed that Ryan is there and he doesn't plan on speaking much, but I was wondering if the JCC advisor was also invited in the same capacity to attend in that way. And if not, I really recommend that we consider doing that to balance out the entire system. I think that just makes sense if Ryan Lombardi is on the panel to also have Kevin Claremont.
Go ahead, Nick.
Thanks so much for pointing that out, Logan. I actually wasn't aware that there was someone in that capacity, but I do think that the equivalent, if we were to make an analogy of the you know, the I don't know the proper terminology Cornell wise, the prosecutor's office there, the person in charge of them would be Ryan, and equally so the defender's office, the person in charge of them would be Claremont. So I definitely think we should be inviting Claremont to this meeting.
That's not my understanding though of what Ryan's role is. He's not, is he? I thought that there was a response. Ryan, when I initially asked about Ryan, my recommendation was because he is the vice president for student and campus life, and student conduct is going to end up in his area. And it seems important to hear from him, you know, why he thinks that's important. But there was a question and a response on in the public comments, and Marissa, maybe you can speak to this. I think you indicated that there is a law school faculty advisor for the complainants codes counselor too. Is that right?
Yeah, so just in case anyone's not familiar, the complainants advisors are a currently existing group at the law school, and they advise complainants in Title IX cases. And they have talked to university counsel, and the idea is that they are going to become the complainants codes counselors. They already have a law school advisor, that's Professor Laura Undercuffler. So that's what I was responding to there.
Okay.
Does that make sense, Barb?
Yeah, I guess I'm confused. I was confused, so I'm glad you, because when you reference the complainants codes counselors are a pre-existing group, that's under Title IX, which, so you guys are in both processes, but this process that we're talking about is separate from Title IX.
It is, but they've already agreed to be to become that office. So that's sort of what I meant. I didn't want to get into like all of okay. the weeds of that, but I'm happy to if people are confused about that.
No, I just wasn't aware of it myself. So I didn't know that.
Thank you. Got it.
But maybe, that's not Ryan, my point.
But just to the suggestion on Professor Claremont, I don't know if he is available, but I do think he would have a valuable perspective, especially since the independence and accountability of our office is something that keeps getting brought up. And I do think that he's someone that provides that accountability for us. And he has been involved in this process for several decades as well.
All right, not a name I was aware of. So I guess then, is that someone that we want to try and very last minute see if he's available to attend as a panelist?
Do we need a motion for that? Because if so, I would like to motion to invite Professor Claremont of the law school.
Okay, we have a motion to invite Professor Claremont. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Any additional discussion? All right. Seeing none.
Actually, sorry, can I just pop in here simply because I've known Kevin Claremont for many, many years, including in his role as having been on the CJC for years at different times when I was on long ago, as well as his role in the code at different points. So I think that it's not simply that he is you know, the advisor, which I think is sufficient, but he really has a historical memory about the code that I think could be very useful, not necessarily as a presenter, but as a resource. I mean, I think he should present in a short period, just like everybody else. We're asking to keep it short, but I think he will also be a very good resource to have there if people have some questions.
Thank you, Risa. Any other comments? All right. Go ahead, Jen.
Is it at all problematic that we were specifically asked to make the code, I guess, that he wrote, right? Logan just put in the comments, much more legalistic. So he might have a really tight tie to the old code, and we've been specifically asked to write something different than that. So I don't know if that would give him, sorry, my dean is calling me. I have to mute for a quick second.
Okay. Go ahead, Logan.
It's kind of hard because I was going to speak to Jen's point and say that Professor Claremont has been nothing but supportive of code changes and didn't try to like infiltrate the CJC in any way last year. And he was extremely helpful with his comments. And I wanted to point out what Risa said, which is that not only is he the GCC advisor, which is why I think he should be a panelist, but he also probably knows the most about the code. He's one of probably the 10 people of the law school who knows the most about the code and can really speak to the history strongly, if that is brought up.
Okay. I do want to be respectful of Matt's time, and we are right at the 5:30. If we could get whatever, I think we need a motion to table this till after the Zoom. Would that be what we would need here to hold on voting till after we do the Zoom training?
I would just like, if we motion to vote right now, that'll take like 15 seconds. There's only four of us, and I worry that we might not have quorum later. And Jen says she has to leave.
And she's gone. So we don't have quorum. Window missed.
And the motion, was this the motion about Kevin?
About Kevin, yeah.
Well, at the very least, I think we can ask him to, if he can come and be available, if people have questions, that he would be somebody we'd encourage to come. I mean, yeah. You know, that seems like, you know, we don't have to vote on that.
I don't think we have to vote on encouraging. Oh, Jen,
I jumped back in so I could vote. I heard you saying that and I clicked off too fast. So I have 2 seconds, Nick. What do you need me to vote on?
Inviting Professor Kevin
Claremont,
yes.
All right, we have a move to question. So all those in favor? I can see your hand too. And all right, we have 3 yeses and 1 no. With that, the motion does not pass. All right, and now we're gonna
I didn't hear Logan's reasoning because I was on the phone. So I feel like I really should abstain. And then I don't know where that vote falls. Would it fall in dissension as well?
Jen, can I quickly tell you what I said?
2 seconds.
Because okay. I think I don't want to change your mind, but Claremont is like historically someone who knows a lot about the code. He's also like a really strong ally to the UA and the CJC and has offered help and has absolutely no issue with the code being less legalistic and has been a big supporter. So I think that he would be a huge asset. And in the same way of Ryan's capacity, I believe that he balances out the end. And I strongly believe he should be there.
I feel like I read his comments. I don't know if I can just talk out of line though. I apologize. And I have to go or else I'm going to get fired, but not really. I feel like I read his comments and on the public comment thing. And he was pretty, if I remember correctly, it seemed like it was against what the CJC put forward, and I'd have to go back and look. I really don't have any, I can go either way about it. I just feel that I remember reading something. I've never met him, but his name sticks out because I must have read it in the public comments. And whether it was last spring or this fall, I can't remember because there's been so many. But I do feel like it was like against what the CJC was saying. So that's what makes me nervous. And not that we shouldn't have panelists that see both sides. So I really defer to the group. And if it's a 3-1 vote, 3 should win.
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to have a majority, and a majority vote would be 4.
Out of 3-4 people?
Yeah, no, the group is 7, voting members of 7. And so in order for it to be a majority, we would have to have 4 votes of yes. It's not the majority of who's here, but the majority of the CJC.
Is that true? How can we have a majority of people that aren't here?
Wendy, is that true via Robert's rules? I thought it was the majority of the voting members at each meeting.
That's how I would hear it.
Pass.
Me too. That's what I would have thought. It's otherwise you could never get anything to pass anywhere.
I believe that 3-1 passes.
I would think so too.
Or 3-0-1 if Jen chooses to abstain, I think would still pass. That's how we've done it in the past.
I believe I can look look it up in Robert's Rules because I don't know off the top of my head, but I do believe it's a majority of the voting members that are at the meeting, not the total number.
Okay. Okay.
That's what I would think.
Into that with the GPSA the other night.
Well, that's what I was going off. I attended the GPSA and they had numbers that I thought were the majority of the voting members, but they said it didn't pass. So let's defer for now. Let's get back to Matt. The vote has been cast. We have it. And I will respond back and let everyone know. Let's let Jen go. And let's turn over to Matt now and have him talk to us about our Zoom webinar tomorrow and how we make it the best we possibly can.
Thank you. I will be there facilitating. So I think that's a good start. I don't know a ton about it. So I think the first thing I would just ask is just quickly, like, you know, what are your goals, you know, and then I can try to talk through it.
Yeah. And I can speak to things, and if I get things wrong, folks, please correct me. But the goal here is twofold. One, to provide the panelists an opportunity to present their standpoint on the current revision. So they'll each get about 5 to 7 minutes. I'll do an introduction of why we're here and what the goals are for the forum, and then turn it over to each of the panelists to do about a 5 to 7 minute introduction. And then at that point, we would shift into a public comment and question timeframe. And one of the goals that was voiced was the desire to have the ability for folks to make their comments directly to the group, be that with or without video. I'm not sure what would be the most advantageous, but that they're able to provide it through their voice as opposed to it being entirely done by myself reading the questions and comments that are put in through chat. So that's kind of where I think we stand. And Nick or Rista, if either of you think differently, I would appreciate your feedback here. We're no longer in quorum, so I guess we're a little more informal now. So that sound about right?
I have to apologize. I got sort of distracted by something, but I think that the idea, we have the panelists. We want people to be able to actually be seen when they have comments and questions from the audience. And that seemed to me to be the most important aspect.
Okay. Yeah. So that's, you know, pretty easy to do. And we've done that before actually. And in some other webinar formats, but basically we just need to have sort of a mechanism for people to kind of put the question forth. Like they either have to do something like use a raise hand feature, mm-hmm. And then we would bring them over, or they could put the question that they're going to ask into the like a Q&A, you know. And if they put the question forth and they don't do it anonymously, of course, they'd have to put it forth and with their name, then you would see, okay, I see Bob Jones has asked a question. And then you say, we recognize Bob Jones, and then I will know to go to the attendees, pull them over as a panelist. And then we can say, go ahead and turn on your camera and microphone and please ask your question. And I'll make sure that they're visible, you know, and we can do it that way. So that's very easy to do. I just need to know who to pull over and we can do it.
Yeah. So let me ask that question then. Is it, because there might be some folks who don't want to be on video and they want to just post it in the chat. So is it possible to do both and stating you have two options? You can raise your hand and as such, we will recognize you and you will be allowed to speak with or without video to present your question, or you can place your question in the Q&A, in which case I will read the comment or question out for you. Is that possible to do?
So basically, let's say I'm an attendee and I ask a question in the Q&A, and then you would say, do you want us to read your question or do you want to say it out loud? And then how would they tell us that they'd want to say it out loud?
Well, that's where I was thinking, if they raise their hand instead of putting it into the Q&A, that would let us know that they have a comment that they would like to themselves.
Yeah. So anybody, that's right. Yeah. So anybody who raises their hand will go in a queue on the attendee side. Okay. And if they don't want to be on camera, they can just put it in the Q&A.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that works.
Can I ask a question about that? I don't know anything about the technology. I understand it when you explain it. So my concern about this is that I think that we should make sure that a queue is an equitable queue. That is, that we have people who are queuing up and they're called on in that order. And I'm afraid having two lists will make it very difficult to do that. So I wonder if, Brandon, we could take your idea and put it all, everybody goes in the Q&A. And if somebody has a question they want to ask and they do not want to ask it out loud, put your question in there and we'll do that. If you have a question you'd like to pose out loud, put that in your Q&A. Say, I have a question I'd like to pose out loud. You know, I'd like to be on video to give something like that. I'd like to pose live. And we can encourage people to actually give us some idea about what the question might be, the subject matter. But I think the main thing is to have that cue so that we know people come in, you know, in that order.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. You know, just a cue of questions. Some will say, I'd like to ask live. Some will say, this is just, you know, if they don't say that, then it's just for text and just to be repeated.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was what my other thought. I didn't know how you might feel about that one as well. And I think that probably works better. And I can remind a couple of times again, just a reminder, if you are posing a question and would like to state it live, please make sure you include that in your comment or question. And that way we can make that kind of clear to folks there. So yeah, I think that would work. I guess the one thing that we'd have to kind of think about from the viewpoint is, you know, again, they're both comments and questions, and not all the questions will be answered. So is there a mechanism by which the panelists can communicate? So say Barb or Marissa can say, I would like to answer that question. So that way, if it's posed, you know, because basically, unless somebody tells me they want to answer the question, I'm going to pose the question and say that it's a question that will be included in the comment feedback that we are providing to the council's office, unless one of you is to say you want to answer. I just don't want me to put a question out there and then go, okay, anybody who's going to answer? So that's where I'm wondering the best avenue to ensure that if a question is posed, that it is going to be answered.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Nick.
Brandon, so right, we can't make panelists answer, but we can also just, you know, if no one answers the question that's posed, then you could step up, or anyone from this committee that you designate, and just be like, okay, seeing that the panelists don't want to answer this question right now, we will look into it and try to get back to you with an answer.
Yeah. That's a good approach there.
Yeah, and if you want to, you know, and this is usually my recommendation as far as the chat goes, is to restrict it only to the panelists, and then so attendees don't use the chat. You all could. So if you wanted to back channel, and say, I'll take this question, you know, you can chat those things to each other. And if you want to do that even outside of Zoom, you can set up some other way to do that. I know some people like to do that in Google Doc or Slack or whatever. Yeah. So whatever your preferred way of doing that, but basically we'll set it up so that you can just message each other as a group or directly. Just make sure you don't do anything that goes out to all panelists and attendees, because then that would be like a broadcast out. So
okay.
I had that same thought about using the chat for that, but also I wanted to mention, because it's so easy to fall, and I'm doing that myself, it's really easy to fall into talking only about questions because you got a box that says this is for questions, right?
Yeah.
But that the box that seems to be designated for questions, I think that people should also be reminded that you may have questions or you may have comments you want to make, and you can do either a question or a comment, or maybe even both, live or in that box. And just let us know if you want to do it live.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a good point there. I do want to stress that to folks, that it's not just questions. If you would like to make a comment or provide your input on this, and I'm going to speak to that as well, that everything that's said in the forum will be included as part of the public comments. So I like that idea, Nick, of kind of saying, if anybody would like to answer the question, please do so. Give it a moment. Okay, seeing that none of the panelists are to answer that question live, the CJC, and I can say that a few times, we'll be reviewing all questions provided and we'll be responding. I won't say answering, because we won't necessarily be able to answer every question, but we can at the very least respond, and that response could be as simple as, We thank you greatly for your question. We've included that in the comments that we provided to University Council as well. And I think that one question I have, Matt, is sort of the, I know there's two kind of models where you can have the questions, all questions visible throughout the entire time frame, or you have them to where they're answered, moved into visibility when they're answered.
Right. The Q&A is by default set up to be moderated, so only the panelists see the questions that come in by default. Okay. And then you can, what it's designed to do is to pick and choose and make sure that there's nothing in there that would be salacious or rude. If you do set it up to have everybody see the questions, then you're basically removing moderation.
Okay. And I think the point that I want to make sure we understand here for the CDC folks is that I would err on the side of that and just moderate as they come in. And the only thing we would look to remove are, to your point, rude or salacious comments that shouldn't be viewed publicly. And, you know, obviously being very mindful of that filter being judicious and not just saying, well, that sounds rude. You know, if it contains swear words or, you know, attacks on any individual, we would not want to include those, but try to just answer or move every question into there, have it stated, have it on record, and then moving on if there's no answer to it. How do y'all feel about that?
Well, I tend to like openness, you know. If I'm going to default in one way, I would tend to default to openness. I'm not afraid of people saying rude things, and I'm not afraid of them swearing. You know, I think if that occurs, it'll occur very rarely because, you know, I mean, there was some of that on the public comments, but, you know, so what? Like, I can deal with that. Yeah. So I mean, and also in a university, you know, on academic freedom, I think we should default to openness. And I think that openness tends to provide trust and legitimacy. And if you shut it down, it looks like that's what you're doing.
One note that I might make, and then I'll turn to you, Nick, is that if you have that live, you can have public folks answering the question for the panelists, and then you get into a scenario where, you know, yeah, I totally agree with that person. It can become a chat that can get a little bit clogged up for people to view and see. I think I would just say that from my perspective, the moderation would be about every question that's there gets moved into, and I would, before I would filter anything out, I would check with the panelists, and I would invite both Risa and Nick and anyone else who would like to on the CJDC to be panelists so that you can see that that viewpoint on the backside, the questions that come in. So let me turn that to Nick now.
Thanks, Brandon. So the way that I'm looking at this is if we had this town hall in person and it wasn't COVID, we wouldn't have a way to like physically remove someone from the room if they start swearing or, yeah, you know, shouting or whatever. Like, sure, we can call Cornell police, but like, you know, that's a little excessive. So I feel like we should afford them the exact same opportunity as though this were in person, because in person, we can't just stop them.
Yeah. I agree in that perspective. I disagree in that in a public forum, you are less likely to have someone yell out, yeah, I agree exactly with you, when people are presenting in this perspective, or being able to yell out obscenities or things of that nature. It's a lot harder to do than it is in a chat feature, as we've all witnessed in our lives and social media and everything. That would be my only concern there in that regard. Again, I don't think that we necessarily have to moderate out, you know, filter out many questions. It would really only be like just a yeah, because what are we gonna do with a yeah? You know, somebody is like, you know, they're providing their agreement to the statement or whatever it is, that could happen. But that it would just be anything that came in would be there. So,
yeah, I mean, the only thing just to quickly, from a technical perspective, just so you know, it's publicly advertised. So somebody from, you know, Denmark can just start saying, Trump won. You stole the election. You know, he could just continue on. You know, it could just be stuff like that, you know, and if you have enough people doing it, it would disrupt your meeting completely. That's why usually people choose moderation, just kind of like identify, like, there's someone trying to disrupt your meeting, then, you know, I could take action, I could remove that person, that kind of thing. But if it's I mean, and that's why I'm saying, like, when you have a physical meeting on campus, you're not likely to get someone from somewhere that wouldn't have any business being there. But now that it's open to the globe, basically, you can invite the world, and that there might be like a teenager somewhere that just wants to, you know, mess up your meeting.
Yeah.
So that's the only other side of it, unfortunately, that happens.
I'm willing to risk it. You know, I mean, it's funny, I'm actually writing right now about the way in which technology is viewed as kind of neutral, but it's really not, you know? So I think that, I think we should just be a university and, you know, recognize that there can be messy things. And if something gets very, very messy, then, you know, you can remove somebody who's, you know, doing, you know, something about Trump or whatever, if that occurs. I mean, I think we'll be lucky if people come. You know? I mean, that's my concern, because it's such short notice. So that's more of what I think is our issue.
I guess I just might make, you know, my last sort of plea, in that I would prefer moderation as the moderator, in fear of, if something is difficult, to put myself in a situation of having to address what just happened, what was stated, and what happened. And I've seen that happen, and it's in the moment, it's really hard. The employee assembly got Zoom bombed, and it was atrocious. It was horrific what they typed into those comments. I could not believe, I always thought Zoom bomb was like, oh, somebody jumps in and they're dancing and they're being stupid or whatever. It is horrific what they said in that employee assembly meeting. And I would just ask if you could be, consider the fact that I would have to be the one to react to that. And that could be very challenging for me.
Okay. Well, that, you know, I mean, I think that's interesting. I had no idea that occurred in the employee assembly. It's really unfortunate. You know, if I were the moderator, I would be saying, sure, I'll just deal with it. But I am concerned about your concerns. And it sounds to me like you're saying, look, it's just a matter of when it becomes public.
Yeah.
And so if it becomes public, other people can still chime in and say, I agree with that comment, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, they would still be able to put that in there. They just wouldn't see it in live. And we will have a full transcript of the questions, whether they are published or not. We'll have all that transcript. So mm-hmm. everything will be there. And, you know, so if there are a couple of, you know, people to say, yeah, I agree, we'll be able to see when they came in and when they line up with the video. So it would be noted. And again, I think it's just a matter of when it becomes public, so that everything that is in there gets asked and put out there. And I think that would be really helpful.
And wouldn't it be live when they're asking it?
Correct. Yeah. So if somebody.
Or live. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I would go along with your preferences because of your having this sort of, you know, post-traumatic event situation. It sounds pretty bad.
It was yeah. really terrible. I did not know that was what Zoom bombing was, but some terrible people out there. So I think if that's okay, then let's err on the moderation. And again, I guess the only other thing would be to ask, and I will ask of the other members who are not here as well, if any of them would like to be on the panelist side of things. It affords you the same opportunity. If you decide you want to ask a question, you can do so. You would just, you know, put it into the chat that you would like to be put into the queue as opposed into the Q&A. And then you would have your camera and microphone turned on as a panelist to ask the question. Go ahead, Nick.
Oh, I just wanted to self-nominate for that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would love to. It seems to me the whole CJC should have that option, right? That's what you're opening it up to?
Yeah, like I said, I'm more than happy to have any of the panelists, any of the CJC be on the panel.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, we don't have to present to do that, but it also means that people who are making comments or asking questions would see who's on the CJC, who's present, right?
Yeah.
I think is a positive thing.
Would they see the panelist list, Matt, like who are, only if you're visible, would they know you're there, correct?
Yeah, I think you'd have to say who's there, you know, and, okay. You know, maybe list everyone who's there. You could do that.
Could we do a quick just, you know, I'd like to recognize the CJC and ask you all to turn on your video and just everybody kind of wave and welcome kind of Would that be possible in the beginning?
Yeah, and then they could show a gallery view of everybody so they can all see who's there. And
okay. How about that, Risa? Does that sound good?
That sounds great, because I think that's what we would do in a live forum, is we'd probably have the committee that's sponsoring present.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And Matt, any other important things for us to clarify for you for tomorrow?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'll work with Wendy to get the final list of invitees. I already have a good list, but I think there might be some additions. And then also we just need to get the captioner finalized, Wendy, for whoever that's going to be. But
I heard back from the person that you actually recommended, Doreen. I heard back from her today, so I have her information. And it sounds like now that the rest of the CJC will just be as panelists as well. So I'll just send you that information as well. And then I believe we're all set.
Okay. So then I'll send those invites out tomorrow in the morning. That should be plenty of time, right, to give the invites? Yeah. Yep. So everybody will get an individual invite that they can use to join on the panelist side, and got captions taken care of, and you're going to record it, right? We're going to record it. Mm-hmm. And do you want any, I think you still want the transcription captioned after the fact, right? For the recording? Okay.
Yeah.
Standard turnaround?
Yeah, that's fine. Thanks, Matt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Logan, you had a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, do people need a Cornell email in order to join the meeting? Because, okay, I've gotten emails from alum that are interested in attending. So do all I have to do is send them the link?
I believe, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, they need to have a Zoom verified account.
Okay.
So they can use like a Gmail account, they can use a Cornell. And I actually tested that. Like, I set up a Zoom account using my Gmail just to make sure it still worked. I had to test something else out. And yeah, as long as it's a Zoom verified account. If they don't, if it's not something that's verified by Zoom, they're not gonna be able to get in at all.
Okay, thank you.
Was I right with that, Matt, I think?
Yeah, I hold on just 1 second. I just wanna make sure I have, because I made the webinar link, right? For this one?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, okay. So you want it to be just, they have to have a Zoom account of any kind to join.
Okay. Yeah, because there are going to be individuals there's going to be individuals that don't have a Cornell account. I know there's alum and that are interested in this as well.
But you want them to have at least have a Zoom account in general that they need to be signed into? Yeah. Or is it just public? Like they see the link, they click the link and they can come in without a Zoom.
No, I would say a Zoom account that's a Zoom verified account.
Okay. Wendy, I guess with the, go ahead, Barb, I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to, at the appropriate time, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your flow, but I just would like clarification on whether when you talk about all the JCC members being panelists, are they panelists as in people who would answer questions, or are they panelists for purposes of the Zoom so that they can help facilitate who's answering what questions? I wasn't clear on, I just want to make sure. Sure. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Yeah, no, great question. So it's the CJC would all be panelists, and they're panelists from the perspective, not the JCC, but the CJC, in the perspective of being able to see all the questions that as they come in, and being able to come in and ask a question and as well make themselves present at the beginning of it.
Okay. But are they also people who are weighing in with a perspective on what if somebody makes a comment? I assume we're all just listening if there's a comment.
Yeah.
And if there's a question, yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to say,
No, that's a good point of clarification. I myself am absolutely not answering any questions, simply moderating the process. I don't know, at this point we put together the panelists to let them know that there would be questions that they may be able to answer. I think what's important here is that if we are going to answer a question, it's as the CJC and not as individuals, because I know that even individually we have disagreements about what the processes are. So I think that's important to clarify and ask, of Risa and Nick, what their perspectives are as well.
Yeah, I mean, my sense is I don't really want to participate. The only thing I could picture, you know, because I want to hear what people have to say. The only thing I could picture might be useful in terms of our being a panelist is, let's say somebody asks a question very specifically about the history of what happened, you know, in developing the code, because it's a complex kind of a thing. And not to go back to day one and, oh, it's been this many years and that many years, but to say, like, if somebody says, well, why do we have the accountant's office writing this if you've got a CJC and that's their job? And, you know, that sort of thing. Rather than just saying, well, we'll get back to you on that. You know, I mean, we have some information about what happened. Now, nobody may ask that question, but it would seem to me to be odd if somebody has information not to just say, okay, here's the order in which things occurred, and not reflect on it, but just here's the order in which things occurred.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that makes sense. And again, we'll have the chat there to be able to speak to, and you know, if somebody asks, if we see, because we're going to see the questions coming up in advance, Risa or Nick, if you see a question, you're like, I think this is one that could clearly be answered by the CJC from a historical perspective, then obviously that gives you that opportunity to be able to answer in that regard. But I don't think, you know, if they're asking, you know, standard of evidence, where nobody from the CJC is going to weigh in on what their vote is on the standard of evidence, because that's to the public to give us that feedback. Does that answer your question, Barb? Is that clarifying?
It does. I think there are very few questions that there aren't a diverge. Even the question of how we got to the point of having these counsel's office prepare this draft. Yeah. I listen to people and I feel like there's more than one perspective on that, but
yeah,
that's neither here nor there. I'm just going to go with the flow and try to answer, be a resource and try to answer questions that are available. I really hope, and this is what I hear most of this group saying, I think, is this is a public forum for people to speak and offer their opinions, and we want to listen to that.
Yeah. Okay. If it's not a specific Zoom related, Nick, I want to be respectful of Matt's time and not keep him longer. Is it okay? Matt, do you think we've got everything clarified from your lens then?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will get on early. I will get there probably around 6:10, so we have time.
Okay.
Just to be there and I can kind of look at the back end. I would encourage everybody here to do so as well, to get on early so you can, you know, test your audio, make sure your video is working, all that kind of stuff. And I'll send out that information as well this evening.
And I was just going to ask one last thing, just in terms of, would there be any screen sharing? Are you going to sharing anything?
No, there won't be any screen sharing.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Matt. We've got a little bit longer here. We'll finish up our business and have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Okay. See you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Nick, you're up.
Thank you, Brandon. I just wanted to bring up a point of order. Now that we've clarified that we indeed have had majority to invite Professor Kevin Claremont, could you just acknowledge that he will be invited as a panelist, just for the record?
Yes, I will acknowledge that he will be invited as a panelist. I do not have his contact information. I'm not sure, Marissa, if you would like to.
I can post it in the chat.
Okay.
Actually, I'll just email it to you, Brandon. I feel like
okay, that's... yeah, totally fine. And I'll send Professor Claremont that invite to join us. And also, I'll include in that invite, if that's okay, to say, you know, if you're unable to attend as a panelist, we also encourage you to tune in, and you are welcome to make comment as well. So thanks for giving me that insight. I did not know that was a person that we should include. I'm still learning all the pieces. Okay, I think we got through. We never got a chance to talk about the question that we would ask. But I think that, you know, being that we have the ability to be panelists, I would just say that, Nick, that was a question that you had stated. And I think that I don't see any reason that shouldn't be a question that we could pose without needing a vote. But I don't know if anybody would disagree with that statement. I think it's a pretty black and white question of which, you know, what the panelists think of that standard. The only thing I might caution is that I think that question is, the panelists are going to give their perspectives on that one. It is such a high level, hot topic. So maybe if it's not addressed in the panelists' presentations, then we could ask that question of them. That seem reasonable? Okay. All righty. Well, this is a quorum, no quorum. We made it through. We got the Zoom process figured out. I really appreciate everyone's help in getting us here.
Super quickly. Just so we don't forget, we should also include Professor Claremont's email in our correspondence to Brandon when we tell him who to make a Zoom panelist, so that he also lets him be able to speak and view everything.
Yeah, if he does agree to join as a panelist, I'll get that over to Wendy and Matt, so they know. All right, any other topics before we close the evening here?
How's your ankle?
It's doing much better, Lisa, thank you. Yeah, I'm only half hobbling now.
Oh man, what a drag. At least it's not icy outside right now.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, thanks again, everyone. I really appreciate everyone. We'll have the Zoom tomorrow, and then we are going to need to, and I'm getting clarification on the, when we need feedback to council's office, whether it's close of business on Tuesday, even though the comments can go all the way up to there, if we have a grace period to provide the feedback. But I would say to anticipate, we're gonna have to have another meeting on Monday to finalize how we're gonna get these comments put together. You know, in the end, if we do have to just give council's office a big data file and that's all we can do based on the time frame, then that's all we can do. We'll address that I think on Monday.
Oh no, we'll do more.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Thank you, Reese.
That, you know.
Yeah.
This is nothing compared to what it was like last semester.
All right. I appreciate that, Reese. I think, yeah, because I don't think it's gonna be so overwhelming that we can't, you know, kind of edit and put it together in a digestible format. So we will readdress that.
Can I ask one other question?
Oh yeah.
Are we going to send out a reminder to that big list of emails?
I don't believe a reminder email was scheduled to go out because it went out so close to the time frame. Wendy, can you clarify if that's correct?
I'm not certain of that either. And Gina has been out of the office today. I mean, I can check with her first thing in the morning to see if something will go out. But again, that's a list that we have to coordinate with other individuals and make sure that there's not another, like, basically a whole campus-wide mailing going out, those sort of things. So there's some timing that has to be considered with that.
Yeah, if there's any way to do it tomorrow morning, this, you know, it's been, I don't know why, but somehow this last week has seemed a little busy. And so, you know, if possible, I think that would be good.
Risa, just to answer that, if the Office of Assemblies can't do that on such short notice, and also because of the email rules, I can definitely guarantee you that all the graduate and professional students will receive an email from me in the morning.
Great. No, I appreciate that, and encourage folks to send out the reminders. All righty. Well, thanks, everyone. Thanks for Logan for joining us here today. I know your schedule is a little tight, so I appreciate you being here with us. And thank you, Barb and Marissa. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'll see you all tomorrow around a little after 6.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.